This is James Corbett of CorbettReport.com.
And this is James Evan Pilato of MediaMonarchy.com, and we both welcome you back to another edition of New World Next Week, of course, at NewWorldNextWeek.com, and also a huge thanks to ParadigmShift.tv, who is supplying the show on Sky Satellite Channel 201, I believe, James?
Yes, that's right.
So much yet again to go into this week, and we'll begin the way we began last week with a frightening story from FoodWorldOrder.com. Genetically modified cows produce human milk. This from The Telegraph. The scientists have successfully introduced human genes into 300 dairy cows to produce milk with the same properties as human breast milk. Human milk contains high quantities of key nutrients that can help to boost the immune system of babies and reduce the risk of infections. The scientists behind the research believe milk from herds of genetically modified cows could provide an alternative to human breast milk and formula milk for babies, which is often criticized as being an inferior substitute. They hope genetically modified dairy products from herds of similar cows could be sold in supermarkets. The research has the backing of a major biotechnology company. The work is likely to inflame opposition to GM foods. Critics of the technology and animal welfare groups reacted angrily to the research, questioning the safety of milk from genetically modified animals and its effects on the cattle's health. But Professor Ning Li, the scientist who led the research and director of the State Key Laboratories for Agrobiotechnology at the China Agricultural University, insisted that the GM milk would be as safe to drink as milk from ordinary dairy cows. Scientists insist genetically modified foods are unlikely to pose a threat to food safety, and in the United States, consumers have been eating genetically modified foods for decades. However, during two experiments by the Chinese researchers, which resulted in 42 transgenic calves being born, just 26 of the animals survived after 10 died shortly after birth, most with gastrointestinal disease, and a further 6 died within 6 months of birth. James, this reminds us of, I think, several stories we've covered in the past on New World Next Week, but why don't you go ahead and take it?
Well, unlikely to pose a threat to human safety is a phrase that we've heard a lot of in Japan, so I guess I'm used to it right now. But, I think everyone knows that I'm quite opposed to this whole idea, but let's just try something different and let me play devil's advocate and let me ask you and the listeners out there, well, so what's a big deal? If there's no way to determine this genetically modified milk from regular human milk, then what's the big deal?
For me, it would seem that the fact that more than half of the animals die would kind of raise some red flags. And James, I know it wasn't all that long ago, but the story we went over about this transgenic situation, and now I should have dug up the flashback. It's not coming to me, but we covered a story where, of course, many of the animals died, and I made the reference to, you know, the Galtons and the Darwins and the Wedgwoods and their interbreeding that didn't last very long as well.
That's right. And we've also talked about other studies where animals that are fed GMOs are actually more likely to be low birth weight or to have birth defects or to be sterile themselves. So absolutely. It's just an unthinkable situation. But again, once again, I'm all for people being able to do this if they want, but I just want to be able to know what's going into my milk. So again, the most important issue, I think, is the labeling issue and the ability for people to know what they're eating and to decide not to eat this. Because as we know, in the US, there are moves to make it impossible to even label things as being GMO-free, because obviously it's bad for the biotech industry.
The line for me in this article that jumps out is that they insisted that the GM milk would be as safe to drink as milk from ordinary dairy cows, and all I have to do is look to my neighbor to the north in Washington State, where, and other places as well, where we're now finding radiation in our milk. So, James, let's leave that story right there, and as we've noted before we started to shoot here, that our food stories generally garner the most attention, and I think that usually shows, you know, that this is the area that people hopefully can take the power into their own hands, on at least on some level. But let's move now to our second story. The banksters warning that the U.S. will hit the debt limit ceiling by May 16th. This from Reuters. The United States will hit the legal limit on its ability to borrow no later than May 16th, Treasury Secretary Timothy Geithner said on Monday, ramping up pressure on Congress to act to avoid a debt default. saying, quote, the longer Congress fails to act, the more we risk that investors here and around the world will lose confidence in our ability to meet our commitments and our obligations, end quote, Geithner said in a letter to congressional leaders. Default by the United States is unthinkable. Previously, the Treasury had forecast that the $14.3 trillion statutory debt limit would be reached between April 15th, tax day here in the States, and May 31st. As of last Friday, April Fool's Day, Treasury borrowing stood just $95 billion from the ceiling. Some Republican lawmakers have sought to use the need to raise the debt limit as a lever to pressure the Obama administration into agreeing on large-scale budget cuts. The debt limit showdown comes as Congress struggles to complete a spending package that would keep the government operating beyond Friday. Republicans are seeking to use that bill to enact deep spending cuts, and lawmakers are focusing on a proposal to trim this year's budget by $33 billion, a relatively small amount compared with a projected $1.4 trillion deficit. Geithner said a failure to raise the debt ceiling in a timely way would push interest rates higher and spark a, quote, financial crisis potentially more severe than the crisis from which we are only starting to recover, end quote. Both Geithner and Federal Reserve Chairman Ben Bernanke have said a failure to raise the debt ceiling could have catastrophic consequences. James?
Just like a failure to bail out the banks would have had catastrophic consequences and would have resulted in martial law on the streets, as they told members of Congress before the bankster bailout in 2008. But I don't think realistically that the Congress is going to say no. I don't imagine that. I know there will be some political wrangling and haggling, and there might be some budget cuts and things like that result out of this, but it would shock me. It would absolutely shock me if they actually did follow through and not raise the debt limit, because as we know, the American economy is a junkie that needs its fix, and it's going to come, and they're just going to continue doing this until it doesn't work anymore. And that's exactly the point. I mean, it's going to stop working at some point. So we already see a lot of people talking about QE3 is on the way, because it's an inevitable result of the economy and the way it is now, and the way it needs to be propped up by more and more debt. So again, I don't think it's realistic to think that Congress is really going to put its foot down here.
Two bits that stick out to me is, I know I saw it as a tongue-in-cheek comment, but it's like, oh, of course, now the Republicans have completely fixed the economy due to defunding National Public Radio, as if that would do the trick. One of the other things you'll never see come up, whether which side of the fake left-right political paradigm, no one wants to stop the wars, no one wants to stop the arms makers, because Lockheed and Northrop Grumman and all of those private military contractors are big business for some of our, you know, growing ghost towns. That's our, you know, our only growing industries here in the States are the prison industrial complex and the snitch system that's growing and all of that. The second bit, James, for me is that this seems to relate in a way to the story we covered last week about the EPA raising the acceptable limits of radiation exposure, as if human physiology has changed. And just this kind of same situation of like, oh, well, no, we're not in debt. We'll just raise the limit and wave the magic wand, as if that kind of makes everything all right. These kind of things, again, should shine a light, I think, for folks on the complete fiat debt-based phony money system.
They should, and I hope people will start researching into it with documentaries like The Money Masters or Money as Debt or The Secret of Oz.
Mm-hmm. There's also a more recent one, I think, from Lee Rogers at Rogue Government called The Power of the Purse. But James, let's now move to our third story, and it's going to be a 3-in-1 news blitz, and we'll begin from the Asia Times. Bin Laden sets alarm bells ringing. After a prolonged lull, the United States Central Intelligence Agency has launched a series of covert ops in the rugged Hindu Kush mountains of Pakistan and Afghanistan following strong tip-offs that al-Qaeda leader Osama bin Laden has been crisscrossing the area in the past few weeks for high-profile meetings in military redoubts. The U.S. has been on bin Laden's trail ever since he fled Afghanistan when the U.S. invaded the country in 2001 to oust the Taliban, but the 54-year-old with $50 million in U.S. dollar reward on his head has always remained several steps in front. Asia Times Online has learned that the decision makers have put a lot of weight on the info on bin Laden's movements, as it has come from multiple intelligence agencies in Pakistan, Afghanistan, and Saudi Arabia. For at least 2 years, little credible news has emerged of bin Laden's movements and motives. Now, intel officials believe they have top-grade accounts as they come from inner circles of military camps. The second part, James, and I'll go through all three and throw it back to you. The top 10 Osama bin Laden sightings from the Telegraph, and we won't go through all 10, but the first one, October 2001, an American woman told the emergency services that she had encountered Osama bin Laden at a convenience store in Pleasant View, Utah. But furthermore, on February 27, 2004, the Iranian news agency reported that bin Laden had been captured sometime earlier in Pakistan, but both the Pentagon and a spokesman of the Pakistani Armed Forces denied this claim. We had January 9, 2006, Michael Ledeen, American neocon with close ties to the Bush crime family, wrote that, quote, according to Iranians I trust, OBL finally departed this world in mid-December. The al-Qaeda leader died of kidney failure and was buried in Iran, where he spent most of his time since the destruction of al-Qaeda in Afghanistan. So that's the top 10 Osama bin Laden sightings. And again, all the links and all the show notes will be provided for you, so you guys can go check out these stories for yourself and get all 10 of those sightings. But our third bit comes from Reuters. Al-Qaeda bolstering presence in Libya. Algeria is concerned by noticeably increased Al-Qaeda presence in neighboring Libya and worried militant groups could lay their hands on weapons circulating in the country. The Algerian deputy foreign minister said he was worried, particularly through the increasingly noticeable presence of AQIM, that would be Al-Qaeda's North African wing, in Libya, and the increasingly noticeable circulation of weapons which can be exploited by terrorist groups. James, break it down for us.
All right, well, let's turn back to that Asia Times article that you started out with, because that's an extremely interesting and important one, because not because I think it has any genuine signs of Osama bin Laden's movements, but because the author of that one, Pepe Escobar, was the author who, a couple of weeks before 9/11, was writing about OBL and how they have to get him now. And that was just a couple weeks before 9/11. So it's interesting to see if this sudden ratcheting up of the OBL boogeyman will result in anything. It's been a while since we've really seen or heard much from the favorite boogeyman of the neocons. So I don't know if they're trying to revive him now or if this is just a blip on the radar, but at any rate, it certainly seems that what's going on in Libya is going to empower terrorists in the long run, whether al-Qaeda or others. So again, it's interesting to see this upward ratcheting of the terror hysteria, and it's just, I don't know how it's going to play out, but it's always a card that they can keep up their sleeves, I suppose. So once again, they draw out the boogeyman to scare us all.
And I would note that Webster Tarpley on tarpley.net has been doing a good bit of work on this Libya al-Qaeda connection. James, before we wrap it up, let's maybe make a couple of mentions of some of the other things. I guess I always want to impress upon folks that these three stories that we cover each week, and by no means encapsulates all the other work I think you and I try and do on our own websites and shows. You were just recently on Russia Today for a brief appearance discussing the situation in Syria.
That's right, yes, and I've just put up a video of myself interviewing Dr. Paul Craig Roberts about Libya and Syria and the prospect for greater war, and that will be the topic of my podcast this coming Sunday, so people can stay tuned to CorbettReport.com for that.
Excellent. And I, of course, on my show, will cover all the other related media and memes and geopolitics. And I actually will be a guest on the Intel Hub on Oracle Broadcasting, actually here in just a few short hours.
All right. Excellent. I hope people will stay tuned for that. Well, once again, James Evan Pilato, thank you for these stories.
Thank you. Take care.